Recovery Elevator, episode 481.
And so once I started hiding it, that grip of power that comes over you when you're hiding something is just, it just magnifies everything.
Welcome to the Recovery Elevator Podcast. My name is Paul Churchill, and I'm so excited to be here with you today. Listeners, on today's episode, we have Susie. She's 52 years old, from Lubbock, Texas, and took her last drink on February 20th, 2024. Great job, Susie. I want to give a shout out to all of our Cafe RE chat hosts. You guys do an incredible job. And listeners, today is going to be a good day. I can feel it. All right, we've still got a couple spots left at our upcoming alcohol-free retreat in Bozeman, Montana. That's going to be this August 14th to the 18th. You can go to recoveryelevator.com for more information or click on the link in the show notes. Thank you, Robin. And before we get any further, I want to mention this show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe place to get things off your chest and figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Listeners, there's a reason why we've been working with BetterHelp for over 4 years now. I believe in the product, I believe in the platform, I believe in therapy. I've personally used BetterHelp and I have found their services valuable. If you're struggling with quitting drinking, I know they can help. I personally found traction in my sobriety journey when I started talking to other human beings about my desire to be alcohol free. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/elevator today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/elevator. Okay, let's get started. Now, my goal here with the intros is to come up with a topic that we can collectively resonate with. My aim is for as many of you as possible to say yep or to nod your heads north and south several times while listening to this intro and the full episode. And who are we? At the fundamental level, we are a group of people who have reached a decision that alcohol is no longer serving us. It's that simple. Now, some listeners have already ditched the booze, some long ago, and some more recently. Another group is still in the process of quitting drinking. And side note, if you do find yourself listening to this podcast, yet still struggling on day one, I can assure you that you're way further ahead on this journey than you think you are. Reason why is you've located the problem, that would be alcohol, and now you're taking action. We also have another group of listeners who are here to support a loved one who is struggling with alcohol. We are so glad you're here with us. So my goal for the next 5 to 8 minutes is to speak upon common truths or challenges we might find ourselves going through. And look, sometimes we cover celebrities who are now alcohol free. What's up, Brad Pitt? Now, other topics explain concepts in sobriety, such as one day at a time, progress, not perfection, all that stuff. Other topics are more spiritual. And I often try to throw out a third eye blind reference just to see if anyone on their summer 2024 tour team is listening and wants to hook me up with some backstage passes. So here are the collective feelings that I can best sense. So this is why you're listening to the Recovery Elevator podcast today. Here goes. You are listening to this podcast because you are seeking change. You are listening to this podcast because deep inside of you, you feel there must be a better way. You are listening to this podcast because you may find yourself stuck. You are listening to this podcast because you've tried and failed more than once to quit drinking. You are listening to this podcast because you've realized you can't quit drinking alone. You are listening because you are seeking guidance or direction. If you've already quit drinking, you are listening so you can stay the course, to reinforce the decision, and not to forget the devastation that alcohol brought to your life. You're listening to this podcast because you're ready to begin the next chapter of your life. You're listening because you're ready to connect with yourself, your fellow humans, and everything else under the sun. You're listening to this podcast because you're being called to serve, to help, to become the light for yourself and others who need assistance. You're listening in hopes to find a better way to live. You're listening because you're done running. You're done escaping. You're done being small. You're ready to stand up and face whatever comes your way. You're listening because a friend, whom you cherish their opinion, sent you this podcast link. You're listening because perhaps last night you did something you regret, and the shame is incredibly painful. You're listening because your name is Ty. You quit drinking almost 17 years ago, and the podcast host asked you if you could edit a podcast. Thank you, Ty. You are listening right now because your heart is open. You are the rarest of rare flowers on this planet. We are all here because we are recognizing that something is out of balance in the whole of society. You are listening as an act of self-love for yourself. You are listening because deep within, you know the only way to better this world is to clean up your own inner mess first. You're here because you're tired, because you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, because a part of you is absolutely exhausted. You're here because you're an old soul. You're here because living in a drunk world is no longer acceptable for you. You're listening because you find it strange that we have to justify or explain why we are no longer drinking a level 1 carcinogen that is linked to over 7 types of cancers, that disrupts your hormones, stress responses, slows down your prefrontal cortex, and shrinks your brain. You're here because you're sick of being tranquilized with powerful legal barbiturates. You're here because you feel absolutely called to challenge a dangerous paradigm that alcohol is good for you. You're here because you want answers. You're here because your inner child wants to bitch slap big alcohol right in the face. You're here because you realize that I alone by myself can do nothing. You're here because your inner child is calling for authentic friendship and connection that isn't formed under a neon moon. You're here because you're seeking answers, seeking a better way to live, and seeking guidance from those who have walked before you. You're seeking authenticity. You're also seeking joy. You're here because you'd rather have peace than to be right. You're here because part of you is angry, fed up, and you're ready to take matters into your own hands. You're here to help. You're here to learn the tools needed to help your fellow human brother and sister. You are here to make this world a better place. We are all here to course correct, then to relay this information to those who may need it. Now, I'm here because I need to be. I'm on the same journey and I don't want to forget. I'm here because this is how my healing trajectory looks. I don't want the daily barrage of alcohol advertisements to slip past the goalie in the conscious mind and insert a message in the unconscious that drinking is good for me, that it wasn't all that bad, and I need alcohol to have fun, because all of that is pure level 10 bullshit. Listeners, we are all here to grow. We know that we cannot grow alone and that we must grow together. Something inside of us is telling us that growing this seed of sobriety is the most important task we have at hand. Now, listeners, I hope you enjoyed this intro, and I hope you resonated with some of the collective truths. And before we hear from Susie, let's hear from sponsor Go Brewing.
Go Brewing is redefining the non-alcoholic craft beer landscape, and we are thrilled to have them as a partner on our podcast. Since launching in 2023, they've become a standout, fulfilling almost 25,000 orders across the U.S. and creating an impressive array of 23 distinct beer varieties. Their expertise hasn't gone unnoticed. Go Brewing won the gold and silver medals from the prestigious Best of Craft Beer Awards for their innovative brews, Suspended in a Sunbeam Pils and Sunshine State Tropical Hazy IPA. Innovation is at their core, and they are pushing the boundaries of beer crafting. This includes pioneering gluten-free beer, like their wellness-infused Freedom Chill, enriched with ashwagandha and L-theanine. Their latest sensation? A double IPA that's a hit with beer enthusiasts, brimming with Mosaic, Citra, and Simcoe hops. And here's something special for our listeners. Save 15% off with the code ELEVATOR, plus free 2-day shipping on orders of 3 6-packs packs or more. That's right, order it today, and in 2 days, it will be at your doorstep. Go Brewing is more than a brand for many. Their beer is a tool for people who want the experience without the alcohol. If you missed it, you can save 15% off with the code ELEVATOR, plus free 2-day shipping on orders of 3 6-packs packs or more.
Susie, how are you?
Hey, Paul, I'm doing great.
All right, Susie, fantastic. Good to be here with you. Question: when was your last drink?
That was on the 10th of February, so that's 17 days ago.
All right, yeah. So we are way ahead of the recordings here. This is dropping a later date, but 17 days, last drink on February 10th. Incredible job. How do you feel?
Thanks. Good. Good. It's been a little bit of struggle some days, but it's getting better. Yes. Ups and downs, but better. Yeah.
Yeah, listeners, I got an email from Susie discussing the last 2 years of her life, and it has been a whirlwind. Ups, downs, mostly downs, but here we are with 17 days. I can't wait to get into that. But before we do, Susie, give listeners a little background about yourself, where you're
Okay.
from, your age, what you do for a living, do you have a family? And then what do you like to do for fun?
Okay, yeah. I'm from Lubbock, Texas. I'm 52 years old and I am married to a great man. He's awesome, super fun. He's my best friend. We've only been married 2 years, a little over 2 years. So we have a great relationship. And I'm a hairstylist here, been doing that a long time, which I love to do. It's just a passion of mine. I love to work out. Me and my husband work out together every morning at 5:30. So that's been a big, I guess, love of mine for over 20 years. But we like outdoors things. We love sports, going to football games and basketball games. We love to go fishing in the mountains during the summertime. So those are mainly it. I love to read and watch movies and things like that. So yeah.
What does it look like at 5:30 in the morning? Is it stretching? Is it yoga? Is it weights, powerlifting, CrossFit?
We do weights and cardio.
Ah,
Yeah,
all
usually about an
right.
hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes in the gym every day. So
There you go. And then what are you reading?
Right now, I've been doing more podcasts currently and audiobooks with a lot of recovery tools and things like that. Just I've been diving myself into that probably the last 2 months, but I've just various things all the time.
All right. Well, Susie, let's do what we came here to do. I'm going to let you take it from where you want to start. If you could share your story with alcohol, was it serving you? Did it no longer serve you? Did you ever try to moderate? Let's go for it. Let's do it.
Okay, sure. Probably had my first drink when I was in high school at some point, just experimenting like a lot of teenagers do, trying a little bit of Strawberry Hills wine or a drink of beer or something like that. I never liked it at all. I don't remember a lot, a lot of people say they remember just loving it or something like that, but I didn't really. I thought it tasted horrible. I never got really to where I was drinking too much at that time. I got married when I was 17, and my ex-husband, he's my ex-husband now, but he didn't drink at all. His dad was an alcoholic. So we got married, and I didn't really drink my entire 20s. I didn't drink during college or didn't drink all in my 20s at all. I might have had maybe a couple of drinks literally within 10-year span. So when I got into my 30s and he started drinking some, then I started drinking a little bit, and we kind of got to where we were going out a lot, things like that. But it never really got out of hand. I was just a weekend drinker socially, never had drinks at the home actually at all. So that was okay. His drinking did escalate to where we ended up getting divorced a lot because of a lot of anger issues and his drinking, ironically. So we ended up splitting up, and I still never went to coping with alcohol at that point. But looking back now, I was always coping in a different form. So it was either I had an eating disorder at one point. I did a lot of excessive exercising, and I realized those were other forms of pushing away my feelings and things. I've been sexually assaulted when I was 13 years old. And so there was a lot of years where nobody knew about that. And so I ended up dealing with that in various forms during my whole entire life. And so, anyways, by the time I was in my 40s, I still really wasn't using alcohol to cope with ever. And so now that I met my husband that I'm currently married to fast forward a little bit after we got married and just dealing with a lot of traumas he's had in his past after a couple of months of us getting married, which is probably less than 2 years ago now, some of that started playing a role in our marriage, and I started really having a lot of insecurities and safety concerns with just my emotions and dealing with that. And just, I think it was a part of me that's wanting to protect myself once again. And so I just drinking in the evenings, you know, cooking or whatever, we would do that some and grilling out or whatever. And I got to where I was coping with our marriage situations and dealing with that. And I just started drinking more. And in looking back now, it really wasn't a serious problem for me until I started hiding it. And so once I started hiding it, that grip of power that comes over you when you're hiding something is just, it just magnifies everything.
How old would you say where you were when you started hiding it, you said?
I was 50.
Okay. All right. 50. Mm-hmm. Would you consider pretty yourself recent. Maybe like a normal drinker up until age 50, maybe late 40s?
You know, I didn't use it to cope. And so I think that was the whole thing. Like when I look back at my times when I did drink, I know I didn't have an off button. You know, I would, you know, at 4th of July or New Year's Eve or whatever it was, a birthday party or a celebration or something, you know, once I started drinking, yeah, I would probably get pretty drunk anytime I ever drank, but I didn't continue drinking. I always had to where, you know, the next day I wouldn't drink for another week or something, you know, but whenever I did drink, it was a problem probably because I have a lot of, you know, memories of stupid things I would do even back then and getting sick or whatever, but I just blew it off as, you know, I just drank too much or whatever, but I wasn't coping with it to ease like an anxiety or something like that.
Yeah. Susie, I think you're hinting on something quite important here. You've said it a couple of times, just said it. You weren't using alcohol to cope, right? Before you mentioned food, you mentioned exercising. And my goodness, I read an article a couple of weeks ago about an exercise addiction that nearly killed somebody, right? It doesn't just have to be a substance. It can definitely be a behavior. So that's the real thing, right? And I appreciate your authenticity, you mentioning those things. You know, so you didn't cope with that before, but then I think life hits this moment where alcohol hits like a different level of functioning. Like, wow, this is a powerful sedative. This is a powerful tranquilizer. And it's somehow socially promoted and accepted. So Susie, back to when you were hiding it from your husband, you know, what did that look like? Cause that's a line in the sand that once you cross it, it's like, you know, was there a voice inside, you know, what did that look like? What did the hiding look like?
Well, it got to where at first, you know, we were doing that when we were cooking or something, and I'd get home and cook and start having drinks. Well, that turned into he wasn't home yet. And I'd think, well, I'm going to have a couple before he even gets here and not tell him, you know, and I started doing that, plus the drinking I would do when I was around him. And that escalated to just keep on more and more and more because it just never was enough at that point. And the more anxiety I had and fear just revolving around our relationship and things, it just grew to where I started hiding it. I started putting it in water bottles, taking it into movie theaters, you know, and I just kept, you know, I'd put it in my bathroom. I would, you know, I never drank during the day at work or anything. It was always an evening thing or before we went out, or I'd take it with me when we went out because, you know, at home, I just had unlimited resources. So when we would go out, I never would really drink too much going out. I never would get out of hand when I was out with other people, but it was at home. And I got to where I didn't want to go out as much because I'd rather be at home just because I could just numb myself out all the time. So that started really causing major disruptions in our relationship because sometimes we'd be planning on going out to eat or something. And then he could tell that I wasn't walking right. And he could tell I was drinking way too much. And we would not even go out at that point.
Gotcha. And then did that lead to your husband saying, "Hey, Susie, have you been drinking?" And then how would you respond?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got to where I would lie, obviously, because that's what I do, because I'm trying to protect myself and I'm trying to protect the alcohol. And I'm like, oh, it wasn't very much. It was just only one or two, or I haven't eaten, or I'm just tired. So it's affecting me more, you know, and those type things. And so that's kind of my excuse that I would come up with. But it got to where it was so obvious. And he got really frustrated with me, obviously. And he got to where he was leaving me a lot on the weekends. Like I would get so plastered. I was getting blacked out drunk and I wouldn't remember anything. I don't remember our conversations. I don't remember what we did. And he would have some talks with me, but I just, you know, I didn't really have the consequences to go with that yet. And he got to where he would leave me a couple of times. You know, he would just pack up his stuff for the weekend, didn't know where he was, things like that, which also causes a lot of abandonment and rejection issues. So that kind of happened. And about a year after I started drinking, he had left me one more time because of my drinking and I didn't know where he was. And then he came back and we were going to talk and he agreed to come back home. And I told myself all day I wasn't going to drink before he got there. And this is where I really started having some major consequences, although it didn't stop me from drinking. But I drank probably half a bottle of tequila before he got there for us to talk. And then we reconciled. He went to the hotel to get his stuff. By the time he got home, I was happy that he was coming home, but I ended up drinking the rest of the bottle of tequila and I was passed out on the kitchen floor with a gas burner on the stove going. I was unresponsive and we really thought I was dead. So we called 911. The ambulance came and got me, went to the ER. I had 6 times the legal limit of alcohol and I ended up getting up in the hotel or the hospital when they weren't watching me. And I ended up having staples in the top of my head, a cut on my forehead. And at that point I had a big black eye. And so he begged me to go to rehab at that point. Okay. And I refused. I was like, let me just do IOP. Let me try something like that. And so he agreed. I went to a local IOP, went there for a couple of weeks. It really wasn't my fit necessarily. They had some good things to say, but I ended up not staying there. So I continued drinking as he got frustrated with me. And I know he was very concerned. And so 2 months after that ER visit, he had left me again because of my drinking. And as he was out of town, I ended up drinking one night, going around trying to see if he was in a hotel somewhere, and because I didn't know where he was. And unfortunately, I was about a half a block from my house, pulled over on the side of the road, crooked, texting about 9:30 at night, and cops came by doing a welfare check because they had already passed by one time, and I was busted. So I ended up getting arrested that night and taken in. And that was a whole nother level of just a nightmare. So I spent about a day and a half in jail. Never thought that would have ever happened to me. So I talked to my family and they came and got me the next day. I didn't have to post bail. I didn't end up breathing. That's the only reason why they let me out without bail. So that about a day and a half later, my husband took me down to a rehab in Hunt, Texas.
Okay.
And at Laha, and I went down there for 27 days. I agreed to go because I was so scared. I was so scared legally and for my life, just everything. My world was turned upside down. And I knew I had to do something at that point to get help.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And how was rehab?
Rehab was, you know, I didn't really have anything to compare it to, but I really liked the facility down there. I loved my roommate, everyone, the counselors, the staff, the patients, everybody was amazing. Like, I don't have any complaints about it at all. However, when I was there about 2 weeks in, you know, they're very disease model. They're very faith-based, which I love that too. But I wasn't really buying the whole disease model for myself because I'm thinking, you know, I'm 50 years old, like, or at that point I was 51. So I'm thinking, I don't have a disease because I've been, you know, I haven't had this problem my whole life. Why is it just now hitting me if I have a disease right now? Like, I don't understand that. So I just took it as take what you need to, understand what you can do to cope with your skills better when you get back, because this was just a negative coping skill I just developed along the way. And I thought, you know, things will be better when I get back. But I never promised my husband or anybody else I would never drink again. I just thought, you know, I'm going to handle things better. I'm going to be more mindful. and get to counseling, those type of things. And so I got back and, you know, they say not to go back into the same environment you left because you're going to just, you know, pretty much be the same. And that was right because I ended up drinking the day after I got home.
Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm, I did. And so I, you know, and when I was in rehab, I met so many people. There weren't very many people that had never been to rehab. Actually, I was one of the very few group that everybody else had been there before. Or, you know, I'd met some people had been there 6 to 12 times. Sure. And I'm sitting there thinking in my mind, how does that happen? Like, I don't understand that, you know, and I had a lot of compassion for people but I didn't understand. Like, I was like, why not? Like, I didn't understand why that took so long. I understand now, but at the time I really didn't get I just didn't put all the pieces of the puzzle together, but I got back, ended up slipping and slipping and slipping, or, you know, like you say, like having some, sort of having some of those moments. And I know I concerned a lot of people because I was just taking my life for granted, you know. Just, I still went out and I had a couple of times where I would drink and drive, even though I had just had a DUI, and that's still pending. That's just still up in the air. I haven't even gone to court for that yet. And I would still go out and just make these foolish decisions. And so right after, it was on Halloween, actually, I ended up I went to the store and bought some drinks, some hard seltzers. And, you know, we were going to cook out that night. And I just, you know, they say this is progressive. And I started drinking that night and I just couldn't stop, and just got to where I blacked out. The next day, I ended up doing the same thing. And that was the first time I've ever woke up and actually started drinking. And my husband was real mad. He went to work. He's just like, you need some help. We've got to get you some help. You can't be doing this anymore. And he's really concerned, but he's also really frustrated because sure. He's put up with this. And he's seen me just go down this dark hole that, you know, we dated for 4 years before that. And I was not like that the whole time. Like, I was not like that. So this was like a new version of somebody that he didn't know. I didn't even know myself. I just, you know, I looked at myself thinking, who is this person who just has no morals, no values in her life? Like, I wasn't raised like this. It's almost like your brain just gets hijacked completely from the alcohol and you have no control over this. So I agreed to maybe check into IOP, and he said, no, he said, if you go to IOP, we're done. If you stay here and you do nothing, you're done. You have to go back and go to rehab. And that's not what I wanted to do. I'd only been out 2 months, but I did agree to go back. But I told him I wouldn't go back for 30 days, but I would go back. So I did go back for 14 days. The first time he was very supportive and very loving. The second time, not so much. He was pretty much done with me at that point. And I really didn't have a lot of hope for our marriage at that point. I did go back down to La Hacienda is where I went, and they're amazing. And I went down there and it was just a different feel. You know, the first time I was scared, but I was also excited and had great friends there. This time I didn't really have very good friends. I felt very alone there this time. Plus, it was a lot of shame involved, even worse, because, you know, you failed, you feel defeated. And I knew I was just caught. Like, I had to make some changes and I didn't want to. And I didn't want to be that person. I just didn't want to be her. And I went down there and it was a good experience. Did 14 days, got back, and I knew some things in our home had to change for sure. And that was going to be very difficult. And I knew I had changed more than anything. Like, I couldn't live like this, or I'm going to kill myself. Like, I'm going to die. I had no quality of life anymore. I didn't enjoy doing anything. Didn't see the pleasure in any day, really. And I hurt every day. Like, I hurt physically every day, even though I was going to the gym and showing up every day after getting blacked out drunk. I don't even know how I'd get on the Stairmaster because I was so disoriented. I think I was putting on such a show and such a performance just to carry on my life, but I wasn't really living at all.
Susie, how long was it until you said 14 days in the second treatment center, the same one, but second attempt? How long ago was that when you got out?
That was this last February, or I'm sorry, last November. So that's December, January, February, 3 months ago from right now.
Gotcha.
Just 3 months. Not that long. So got back and probably, I'm guessing about two to two and a half weeks after that, I did have a night where I was drinking on a Friday night. And the next day I went to work, and when I got home, my husband's stuff was all packed up. So that was pretty eye-opening for me, a moment of very much of a panic situation. I will say the first time I went to rehab, I didn't go to AA when I got out, nothing like that. I had gone to Celebrate Recovery a little bit.
Sure.
Prior to going to rehab, and they were very helpful, but I didn't go on a regular basis. That was like once a week, maybe. But I didn't go to AA. The second time when I went to rehab, I knew I had to get my butt into AA. So when I did get back, the day after I got back the second time, I did get into a women's group, and I started going to a group here that I really enjoyed a lot. And I never thought I would enjoy it as much as I did, because it's just so full of hopeful energy in that room. It made me want what they had, and I kept going back. You know, I would go once a day. And so when my husband left me, I was in such a desperate state of, I did not want to drink, and I didn't want to cope with that. I would go twice a day. Mm-hmm. I was going in there twice a day. And, you know, most of the time I would talk too, like every single time I would talk. And I was just, they were like my lifeline to staying sober, because I was like, I'm not going down that road again. I don't care what I have to do. I'm going to keep myself well. And it doesn't matter if I'm with somebody or not. I have got to, you know, I want a better life for myself.
Susie, a couple of things I want to comment on. And first off, thank you for sharing. My goodness, these last 2 years of your life have been an absolute tumultuous roller coaster of the highest degree. Loops and loops and dips and swirls. Oh my gosh. And I've been there. I got a DUI in 2014, July of 2014, and I was driving drunk 2 weeks later with a broken taillight. Like, I get this. And I know a lot of the audience is nodding their head saying, yep, done there. I guarantee we've got listeners who've been to rehab twice. So on this end, number one, I feel it. I feel you. My heart goes out with you. And you're a rock star for being here and creating accountability. And you're putting this out in MP3 format to the universe. And we all got your back. Now, earlier, you've mentioned the word coping. And we almost put that in like a negative light in this space. Like, oh, it's just a bad coping mechanism. Oh, I'm like self-medicating, right? Yeah, but the liquor stores were essential business in the pandemic. And the reason for that was because it's a powerful medication. It's a powerful tranquilizer. And so do you have any idea like what you're coping, like what you're using alcohol to cope with? And I want to throw this out too before you answer that, and to all of our listeners, the drinking serves a purpose. These aren't like random offshoots. Like, the drinking is serving a purpose. Same reason as anxiety serves a purpose or depression serves a purpose. Do you think it might have something to do with the sexual assault at age 13, or do you know, perhaps?
I think that's exactly what it is. I think it's just a lot of self-rejection, a lot of just not accepting myself. And I think it's also a form of protection for myself. A false sense of protection, I would say. But it's that part of, I've been to counseling before. I've been in a lot of church groups, things like that, and women's groups. And, you know, you think you've healed from things like this, but I think it's just, it's surfaced in one way or another of transforming from one addiction or one compulsive behavior to another. And even though I thought I've worked through things, I know why I'm doing what I'm doing. I think the alcohol, I think when I got in the marriage, is that's the only thing that really would keep that surface down at this point in my life. Because everything else, even though those were very horrible things too, that I was doing to myself, and just not loving myself, you know, just always putting myself down and maybe not thinking I'm worthy, maybe thinking I don't deserve the best in my life, things like that, just not taking care of myself. Sure. And always like everybody else is more important than me, that type thing. But I feel like it's just another form of just, even though those parts of me are trying to tell me something, I would use other things to shut it up, But now I'm learning that I need to listen to those voices, that they're not there to hurt me, actually. They're actually trying to tell me something. Yeah.
Susie, what do you think this is? Earlier you're talking about you didn't quite jive with the disease model. And listen, I'm not here to tell you what it is and what it isn't, nor to the listeners. I have a good idea what I think it is, what it isn't, but it really doesn't matter. What do you think this is? And I'm gonna couple it with what you said earlier. Is you said there was a time when you realized you had no control. And when I realized that in my life with consciousness, like, oh shit, I have no control of this. It was like a freight train going down a hill and there was nothing I could do to stop it. And if it's not a disease, which to tell you the truth, like I don't like the disease model myself, but what do you think this is?
Yeah. And it could be a disease model. Like it could be a disease and I don't really know one way or the other if that's 100% for sure. I just know for myself, once it has a hold on you, like I can't go back to just socially drinking anymore. Like that is, I have to accept the fact that this will never work for me again, ever. And it's a slippery slope. Once I have a drink, I'm going to be a drunk. And that's just the end of the road. Like, it's not going to be somebody that's going to be nice, somebody that's going to be happy. So I don't know. Like, I had a grandfather that was an alcoholic. I don't know about the whole genetic thing. I don't, you know, I just think that if you've got some traumatic things in your life, once you heal from those, and you're always going to be searching for something to cover it up. So I think that's a part of, I think being accepting of yourself, healing from the traumatic things in your life, or it's going to be one thing or another. You know, even if I don't drink, if I don't be accepting with the things that I'm dealing with emotionally that have happened in my life, I mean, I might could go pick up something else, but I don't want to do that now. Now I'm trying to be very self-aware of, you know, being mindful of taking some deep breaths, talking to yourself, asking those parts of yourself, like, what does it need right now?
Susie, can you comment to listeners who don't want to make a change? And you said it beautifully. I think it was in the second rehab. You're like, I have to change, but I don't want to change. Like, dude, those are two inner energies just button up against each other. How do you accept the fact that, yes, I have to quit drinking when there's another part of you inside that says, gosh, I don't want to quit drinking?
Well, it's a choice of life and death. I mean, obviously, at some point, you have to know we own our own outcome, too. And that's a lot of just knowing this isn't working for me anymore. And I don't want to find out. I don't want to find out the next chapter in that book anymore. Like it doesn't really matter about what other people are doing. It's really about me right now and being selfish with myself, like radically loving yourself and self-acceptance, I think. But yeah, just really coming to that place of peace with, I don't know why this happened to me late in life. I don't know why alcohol took a hold of me 2 years ago like it did. But all I know is these are the facts now, and I can't change that.
Susie, that was a great way to answer that with your first line. It's a matter of life and death. And listeners, I got good news for you, kind of. If you continue forward drinking and you're questioning it, eventually the answer will be simple. It's life or death. And I was given that grace, that answer of like, oh my gosh, this is so clear. If I keep drinking, I'm going to die. I don't want to quit drinking, but I also don't want death. So it was easy. You also said, you know, you're not living. And for many of us, our drinking is not a matter of life or death at that moment yet. The progression hasn't taken us there, a keyword yet, but we're living a life where we're not living. We're just zombie walking around. So I've tracked with so much you have said, and I know listeners have as well, and all of our hearts are with you. Let me just recap these last 2 years and your first, you know, 48 years of your life, maybe a normal drinker, shall we say. You know, since last May, you've been to the ER by ambulance poisoning. You've been to IOP, got a DUI, inpatient rehab 27 times, then back to rehab again for 2 months, 2 months later for 14 days. Since then, you've done some real field research. Here we are right now, 17 days away from your last drink. My goodness, you know, we're doing this virtually, but if you're in person, I'd give you a big hug right now. And I know our listeners would as well. It sucks. I've been there. Yeah. I've been on that roller coaster. And how do you get off? Well, I kept building the idea of an alcohol-free life of sobriety, of ditching the booze in my mind until that gained more energy, more momentum than the addiction itself. Let's talk about this AA women's meeting. Are you going back? And also, how are you going to get day 18?
Yeah, I've been going to AA, definitely. I don't attend as many of the women's meetings. There's only one per week, and I'm usually working on that day. I try to go when I can, but usually the group I go to, they have four meetings a day, and so that's very doable for me. So definitely plug it into there. I joined the Recovery Elevator community group, so I'm going to be plugging into that starting as soon as possible. I just joined that late last week. So I'm pretty pumped about that. Still keep on with the podcast and trying to listen to a lot of books. And what was the other question? I'm sorry.
Yeah. How are you going to get day 18? You're kind of answering it right now.
Yeah. Just keep, you know, doing the next right thing. Like they say, just trying to be mindful of myself, keeping myself in check. If I get triggered or something, I've got some girlfriends that I met at rehab that we talk all the time from both times I went. I've got some support here that are really great. I don't have any bad influences in my life. That's one thing, is I never went out to drink with people. It was just me behind the scenes, and that's where I got, it's my own thinking that got me in trouble. I don't have any bad influences in my life that I have to stay away from or anything like that. My coworkers are great. My family's great. My husband could take it or leave it. We're actually currently separated. And so we've been separated since the 30th of December because of my drinking situation. And we're going to counseling. We're working on things. So I'm very hopeful about that. And, you know, just trying to take care of myself and be present, basically.
Mm-hmm. Susie, how many people do you see on a daily basis, or how many other human beings do you surround yourself with on a daily basis that is more than like a gas station clerk or a barista?
Quite a few. Mm-hmm. Yeah, quite a few. Because in the salon where I work, I probably have anywhere from 6, 8, possibly, you know, if more clients a day, and plus all my coworkers I've worked with for several years, they all know my story. One of them, she just actually went to rehab last summer. So we have that in common together. She goes to the same AA group as I do. So I do have a lot of support that way. Yeah.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Good to hear.
Yeah.
I got one more question before we hit the rapid fire round. How can we help you? Right. In terms of like in this, like what do you want us to visualize right now? The listener, myself, how can we help you as in build your alcohol-free life, your sobriety, your life, and visualize it for you and send you good vibes? Just explain, like, how do you see your life being, you know, once this thing's out of, like, in the bag, shall we say?
Yeah, it's just a day in and day out, like literally like simple pleasures of enjoying life, you know. Enjoying just being healthy, having a great community, being involved with things. It's a lot of not isolating. So a lot of like going to meetings or chats, things like that, maybe, being around people, you know, trying new things, just not being scared, being out there, you know, sharing my story. Even, you know, you don't have to have been started drinking when you were 18 and, you know, been where I am at my age yet. It can happen really quickly later on in life. And that's why I wanted to talk, probably, is because maybe there's somebody out there like me, you know, that, you know, sometimes you don't want to accept it later on in life because it hasn't been like that your whole life. I kept thinking about the girl who could handle her alcohol, but it's okay to know you can have a good time going out without drinking. And there's a lot of fun and just having a good balanced life.
Well, Susie, we have reached the rapid fire round. You can answer these questions in 10 to 15 seconds. That would be great. Are you ready?
Yes.
Let's do it. Number one, Susie, what's the one thing you've learned about yourself on this journey?
Oh, self-acceptance, loving yourself. No matter where you are, you're okay just the way you are.
Mm-hmm. Number two, what is your best sober moment?
Spending time with my husband, going to some sporting events sober and just enjoying the moment and the crowd, not having to have a drink in my hand. So, yep.
Yeah. What's your favorite alcohol-free drink?
If be cold brew coffee, ask cold brew coffee. Okay. Starbucks salad, yes. Yeah.
Susie, what's the point of life?
Oh, loving other people, giving them grace and helping them, and letting yourself be loved.
I like that. Yeah. And then what parting piece of guidance can you give the listeners?
Don't ever give up on yourself and don't isolate yourself. Always surround yourself with people. Isolation is definitely crippling for drinkers. And it's very freeing to be out there and just let yourself be known.
And Susie, before we depart, give listeners your own customized, you might need to ditch the booze if line.
Ooh, if you wake up and you're so engulfed with shame because of your drinking and you have drinks in the house, you go put them in the trash and put them in the dumpster. Then you get home and you think you're okay at 5 o'clock and you can handle it. And you go dig your trash out to get the booze that are out there still.
Yeah, that checks out. For sure. Well, Susie, thank you so much for joining us. We're all with you. Go ahead and get that life that you want, that you deserve. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Appreciate it, Paul.
Ensuring no seniors left behind has been the mission of Meals on Wheels for decades now. This nonprofit is well known for bringing food to homebound older adults and people with disabilities, and now a program in Massachusetts is casting that net of kindness even wider to make sure no pets are left behind either. So iBerkshires.com provides dog and cat food for dogs and cats in need of a meal. Listeners, there's a lot of noise out there, but there's also a lot of good. So much good and love, in fact. Recovery Elevator, you took the elevator down. You got to take the stairs back up. You can do this. I love you guys.